This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
For 30 years, we have been confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home from God's eternal perspective. Yes, indeed, the deepest issues of America's heart and home. Not always political issues, but moral and spiritual issues. All kinds of issues, looking at them not from the standpoint just of information, but of what you and I can do in response. How can you and I make a difference? Is it even possible? Have you been wasting our time? I was listening recently, in fact, for quite some period of time, to a radio program. It happens to be one of these three-hour issues-oriented programs that replaced Rush Limbaugh. The host purports to have a listenership of about 15 million people. As I listened to the host or hostess, I discovered that, well, at least 20 to 30 times during every broadcast, she says, "I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know." It's almost like it's a verbal tic. I don't know. But it's revealing something that, in fact, is a truth. So much is happening. All the talk going on about what's going on in our world and in our country and so on. And then the answer, "I don't know." I don't know what to do. So why are we talking about it? Why are we talking about all this information, revealing all of these statistics, all of these different things, and then we say, "I don't know. I don't know what to do." Well, I'm thinking back about 28, 29 years when this program first started. I remember hearing, in fact, reading a comment that came from one of our listeners who said this: "You just cannot listen to Viewpoint long and not be changed." In other words, there's a reason why you're listening, and it's not just to get informed. It's to be transformed. In other words, there's something very different about this program that differentiates itself from every other program out there that's supposedly an issues-oriented program. It's about transformation. It's about what you and I can do and must do in our spheres of influence, not to send out faxes to the president or emails, and not to engage in crusades down the streets of America, but something more profound, something simpler, something deeper, something that has more effect on the future of the country and even on the church. It seems that we are in a situation today where things are deteriorating more and more, and we're going to hear about that here in our country, and we're going to hear about it from the UK, even from a member of parliament. In the second half of the second section of the program today, you're going to hear from a Christian member of parliament who addressed an empty chamber of parliament last week. You're going to want to anchor your seatbelt as you listen to what he has to say, because it's profound. What's going on in our country and in our world is very serious. It's not just serious because we hear of different information, this, that, or the other, and political this and political that. The real issue is not the politics. The real issue is the moral and spiritual condition of the country. And you're going to hear that from a member of parliament in the UK. If we continue to think that our problems are primarily political, we're going to miss the point, and we're not going to see any change that we can really believe in. The change has to come from within, because it's out of the mind and out of the heart that the mouth speaks. It's out of the mind and the heart that the politics emerge. So all politics is not leading, it's actually following the deteriorating moral and spiritual condition of the nation, including Christians, including the church. And we're going to see that. We're going to see it in somewhat glaring color here today on Viewpoint. We're going to have to really move pretty quickly in order to do that. But Before we get into that, I want to give you some direction of positive, some positive direction. And that's through my book, Renewing the Soul of America. This book was written precisely to respond to this condition. It was written and endorsed by 38 national Christian leaders because it was so profoundly different than anything else that they had encountered, supposedly responding to the issues of our time. Renewing the Soul of America. So before we even get into this, I want to provide to you a measure of hope, of direction, not for us generally, but for you and me specifically. And that's what makes this book so profoundly different. Because the subtitle is One Person at a Time, Beginning with You. Renewing the Soul of America, One Person at a Time, Beginning with You. The late Dr. Bill Bright, founder of Campus Crusade, had endorsed the book. He said, as a country and as individuals, we stand at a crossroads to continue on the path to godlessness or to return to the way of righteousness. The late Pat Robertson said, what will happen to America and the world if the people of this generation rediscover our spiritual heritage and commit their lives and the life of this nation to it? Chuck Crismeyer tells us in Renewing the Soul of America, what can be done if we have the courage to make the right decisions. Nancy Leigh DeMoss, now known as Wogglemuth, has a program out there for women. She said, Chuck probes the heart and conscience of our nation with a rare combination of insight, directness, urgency, and compassion. This message desperately needs to be heard and heeded before it's too late. The late D. James Kennedy wrote, with an insightful grasp on the history of our nation's founding, added to a deep understanding of the judgment God has imposed upon nations outside of his holy will, Chuck Crismeyer clearly and crisply enunciates the choices facing not only America, but Americans in this dangerous period of our God-blessed but God-warned country. And that's just for starters, friends. So, I want to make the book available to you as a remedy, a source of remedy and hope and direction for each one of us that will speak to our own minds, hearts, and families. It's an $18 book, yours for $15 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check adds $6 for postage and handling. By the way, this book was served on every member of Congress, the President of the United States, not Donald Trump, before that, the President of the United States, and every senator in the country. Why? To put them on notice. God is a God of due process. Did any of them ever implement any of the things? I don't think so. Because they're more interested in political power and solutions rather than God's solutions. So what are you interested in? Just asking. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Before we get into our own country and its problems today, which are going to be profound, the former United Kingdom Prime Minister gave an interview. Just recently gave an interview, and her name is Truss, T-R-U-S-S, not trust, but Truss. She said the downfall of Europe is at hand. The threat that concerns me most, she said, to Europe is not Russia. It's not China. It's not another external actor. What worries me is the threat from within. The threat from within. Europe's retreat from some of its most fundamental values. Values shared with the United States of America. Oh, really? Her name is Liz Truss. She was the leader of the Conservative Party, former Prime Minister of Great Britain, and she is opening up about the downfall of Great Britain and her description of the horrible state of affairs in Europe. Well, it's worth looking at, and we're going to take a look at it through the words of a Christian member of Parliament there in the UK just last week. Listen carefully.
To stand here in this empty chamber to speak about the original purpose of this space, which was a chapel in the Church of England.
Now, bear in mind, he is speaking there from a former chapel of the Church of England where Parliament gathers. He says it's a sacred space, or at least used to be. Try to listen very, very carefully. This is a truly Christian member of Parliament who is up to his eyeballs with pain and concern about the condition of his country and those who lead it. Listen.
The old chamber of the House of Commons, on which this space is modelled after the Great Fire of 1834, was the Seamen's Chapel, formerly a royal church, given by the heirs of Henry VIII to Parliament to serve as its debating chamber. Madam Deputy Speaker, your chair stands on the altar steps, and the table with the dispatch boxes is where the lectern stood. And I mention this because the link between this place and the Church of England isn't merely ceremonial. The prayers we say here at the start of every day aren't just a nod to tradition. Our democracy is founded on Christian faith. And indeed, this Parliament remains the law-giving power of the Church of England. We in this place have the responsibility to approve or disapprove the doctrine and the rules of the Church. And that is as it should be, because the Church of England is not some private club, just another eccentric denomination. The Church is a chaplain to the nation. And through the parish system, in which every square inch of England has its local church and its local priest, we are all members. We all belong, even if you never set foot in your church from 1 year to the next, even if you don't believe in its teachings. It is your church, and you are its member. And so when I speak of the Church of England today, I am not speaking about the internal politics. I speak of the common creed of our country, the official religion of the English and the British nation, and the institution which, older than the monarchy, much older than Parliament, is the institution that made this country. And it's no surprise that both the church and the country itself are in a bad way. Divided internally, confused, badly led. The church is riven by deep disputes over doctrine and governance, and literally leaderless, with even the process of choosing the next Archbishop of Canterbury unclear, confused and contended. And the country itself reflects this, unclear in its doctrines and its governance, profoundly precarious, chronically exposed to threats from without and within, at risk economically, culturally, socially, and I would say morally. Madam Deputy Speaker, last month, in the space of 3 days in one infamous week, this House authorised the killing of unborn children, 9-month-old babies, and it passed a bill to allow the killing of the elderly and disabled. And I describe those laws in these stark terms not to provoke further controversy, but because those are the facts. We gave our consent to the greatest crime, the killing of the weak, the most defenceless human beings. It was a great sin. And if I, standing here, have any power to repent on behalf of this House, then I hereby repent of what we did. But Madam Deputy Speaker, in the reaction to these votes, and all around us, in reaction to the state of the country and the world, something else is happening. There is a great hunger in society for a better way of living. And I want to use this opportunity to explain what that better way is and why we here in England have the means to follow it. The Jewish and the Christian God is a God of nations. He's interested in people as individuals, but also as groups, as communities, not only of kinship, though that too, but of common worship with a common God. And this nation, England, from which the United Kingdom grew, uniquely among the nations of the world, was founded, created consciously on the basis of the Bible and the story of the Hebrew people. And in that sense, England is the oldest Christian country and the prototype of nations across the West. The story of England is the story of Christianity operating on a people to make the institutions and the culture that have been uniquely stable, uniquely successful. The Western model was forged and refined in England over 1,000 years, from the 9th to the 19th centuries. So what is that model? It's simply this, that power should arrange itself for the benefit of all the people under it, and specifically for the poorest and weakest. That the law is there to protect the ordinary person against the abuse of power. That every individual has equal dignity and freedom, including, crucially, the freedom of conscience, of religion and belief, making space for other religions under the Christian shield. A secular space, indeed, itself a Christian concept, meaningful only in a Christian world. These are ideas that only make sense if you accept that we have some intrinsic value, a value that is given to us, not of our own making or invention. And so through all these long years, from the time of Alfred to the time of Victoria, it was assumed that a nation was a community of common worship, and that our community, this country, worshipped the Christian God. Then in the 20th century, another idea arose, that it is possible for a country to be neutral about God, that the public space, the public square, was empty of any metaphysics, that the route to freedom lay through the desert of materialism, individual reason, no hell below us, above us only sky. And that idea was wrong. And the horrors of the 20th century attest to that, not least in the West, where we escaped totalitarianism, but have suffered our own catastrophes of social breakdown, social injustice, loneliness and emptiness on a chronic scale. And now new threats, ugly and aggressive, are arising, because we have found that in the absence of the Christian God, we do not have pluralism and tolerance, everyone being nice to each other in a godless world. Because all politics is religious, and in abandoning one religion, we simply create a space for others to move into as dominant faiths. And there are two religions moving into the space that Christianity has been ejected from. One is Islam. And in a debate yesterday, I said how much I find myself in agreement on moral and social matters with Muslim colleagues here in Parliament. But as I've been saying, this is a Christian country, if it is a country at all, and I cannot be indifferent about the extent of the growth of Islam here in recent decades. But it's the other religion that worries me even more, and this other religion is a hybrid of old and new ideas, and it doesn't have a proper name, and I don't think woke does justice to its seriousness. It's a combination of ancient paganism and Christian heresies and the cult of modernism, all mashed up into a deeply mistaken, deeply dangerous ideology of power, hostile to the essential objects of our affections and our loyalties, which are families, communities, and nations. And explicitly, most passionately, it is hostile to Christianity as the wellspring of the West. And this religion, unlike Islam, must simply be destroyed, at least as a public doctrine. It must be banished from public life, from schools and universities, from businesses and public services. It needs to be set back to the fringes of eccentricity, like the modern Druids who invest Stonehenge in my constituency, with a theology that is mad and harmless because its followers are so few and no one serious takes them seriously. Now, we can no longer pretend, as they did in the 20th century, that we can be neutral or indifferent about God, that the public square is a godless desert. The fact is that the strong gods are back, and we have to choose which God to worship. And I suggest we worship the God who came in the weakest form, Jesus Christ. This God is a jealous God. It's him or nothing. And we have to own our Christian story, or we have to repudiate it. And not to own it is to repudiate it. And to repudiate Christianity is not only to sever ourselves from our past, but it is to cut off the source of all the things that we value now and that we need in the future. Freedom, tolerance, individual dignity and human rights. Without the Christian God, in whose teaching these things have their source, these are inventions, mere non-existent aspirations. To worship human rights is to worship fairies. But if we own our story, remember the real sources of our civilization, we can have these things and make them real. Real freedom and tolerance and dignity, a culture of love, and crucially a culture of humanity, because we are in the age of the machine. And a great choice confronts us, whether to make machines an image of fallen man, bent on exploitation and domination, with mankind in its sights, or to make them what they properly are, servants of mankind, able to help us make a better world. So, Madam Deputy Speaker, to conclude, a wind is blowing, a storm is coming, and when it hits, we are going to learn if our house is built on rock or on sand. But we have been here before. The reformers of the 11th and the 16th centuries, the Puritans in the 17th century, the evangelicals in the 19th century, all brought this country back from the edge, from idolatry or error or just plain indifference, and from all the social and political crises that indifference to Christianity brought about. And they each, in their generation, restored this country to itself. And a new restoration is needed now, a revival of the faith, a recovery of Christian politics, a refounding of this nation on the teaching that Alfred made the basis of the common law of England all those centuries ago. This is a mission for the church under its next leader, whoever that is. This is a mission for this place, this old chapel, which became the wellspring of Western democracy, and for us, its members. And it's a mission for our whole country, the route to a prosperous modernity, founded on respect for human dignity, responsibility for the created world, and the worship of God.
And there it is. Just under 10 minutes, a direct and open declaration to an entire nation, England, the UK, its broader expression, as to their roots, as to what has happened as they abandon their roots, and what can happen if they re-embrace those roots and reestablish a viewpoint that can determine a new destiny. A very bold thing. He addressed an entire nation from an empty parliament room. Now, why would that be? Because the people don't want to hear it. That's why. They don't want to hear it. They want to do what they want to do, and they've abandoned, in many respects, the God who made and preserved them a nation. And they're the mother country. They're our mother country. And so, here we are in America today. What would we say to America? Is our answer political? That member of parliament says no. England's answer to their demise, their rapid demise, is not political. It's spiritual. That's what we've been saying here on this program now for 30 years. And it doesn't sell well. It doesn't market well. You can't raise money from businesses because they don't want to promote that particular message. Even Christian businesses don't want to promote it necessarily. They have other ideas. And if you stray from those ideas and really go for the jugular, the heart from God's viewpoint, all of a sudden, you will lose their support. And that's the reason why, for 30 years, we have never had or sought business commercial support. Because it's fickle. Very fickle. And it can destroy your whole ministry almost in one fell swoop as you're dependent upon the money that all of a sudden is pulled away. So guess what we do? We rely upon the Lord, and he relies upon you. We rely upon the Lord because it's his ministry, it's his truth, it's his calling, and then he relies upon you because you're his people. You're the ones that are drawn to the program, and so many of you have already testified to how your own life and thinking have changed, sometimes over a short period of time, and sometimes over a much longer period of time. And if that be the case, would you not sincerely and seriously consider becoming a partner in this challenging moment of our nation's history, of the world's history, in the kingdom of
God.
There
is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
We give lip service to the idea that the family is the building block of the nation, of the country. And indeed it is. So why is it then that there's such resistance among professing Christians and their pastors to talk about the number one thing that has affected and caused destruction within the American family, even in God's house, over the past 50 years? Why the resistance? Because they don't want to hear it. Why don't they want to hear it? Because they've adopted the world's view or viewpoint concerning the family and concerning marriage, and therefore concerning divorce, concerning remarriage, and so on. And so the church has actually, through its resistance to the clear word of God concerning the matter of marriage and divorce and remarriage, has actually paved the way for the world's deterioration, for the nation's deterioration of the family. Not only that, but paved the way also for the advance of the practice of homosexuality and lesbianism and homosexual marriage, because as the practicing homosexuals say, you guys in the church obviously don't believe what God says today about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, so why should we believe what you say about homosexuality? No, we're not going to do that. You're hypocrites. That's what they say. And that's how it's advanced. You see, we haven't been honest with one another. Our pastors have been more interested in pandering to the tender feelings of the people that they're trying to seduce into their churches without actually receiving and confessing their sin and receiving forgiveness of Christ. No, they're offering fellowship without faith, legitimate faith. And so things are deteriorating and have been deteriorating ever the more so, notwithstanding all the efforts to get the message out. And that's just what happened to ancient Israel and Judah. God raised up prophets. He raised up voices. He told Isaiah, lift up your voice like a trumpet and show my people their errors, their ways. He did, and they didn't want to hear it, so they put him in a log and cut him in half. That's what they did. You may not have realized that, but that's what they did. He told Jeremiah to stand at the gate of the Lord's house, and then he also told him to stand at the gate of the city and tell the people, warn them from him, and he did, and they threw him in a dungeon and down into a pit. That's what they did. Because they didn't want to hear it. They never changed their minds. Ever. Until Jesus came along, and at the end of his ministry, after 3.5 years, he watched over Jerusalem, and he said, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you that persecute the prophets, I've sent these people to you to woo you, to warn you, to tell you what my desire was, and you wouldn't have any of them, and you stoned them, you killed them, you persecuted them, and now you're persecuting me too. Are you beginning to get the picture? And we're no different. Now you can understand a little bit better why I say that for 30 years we've been paddling a canoe, as it were, straight up Niagara Falls. But that doesn't give us any relief, because God said, this is what I want you to do, Chuck. I want you to leave the practice of law. You've been pleading the cause of men long enough. I want you to plead my cause in the land as a voice first to the church, my warmest audience, and then broadly to the nation. And that's what we've done. And what did we do? Well, we did it just like a lawyer would do it. We make an opening statement to the people right here on this program. We tell you what we're going to tell you. And then we tell you and we show you the evidence. Documentary, testamentary, bring on guests, all kinds of ways to disciple people, to encourage, to build up, to show where we've gone astray, what we can do to line up with God's plan, principles, and purposes so that we can rebuild a nation under God. Rebuilding the foundations of faith and freedom, which is the phrase undergirding the very foundation of Save America Ministries in 1993. That's what we've been doing. Some people have changed. Change you can believe in. They testify to me. They send me letters. They call. But most people, well, they just take it as business as usual. They think it's just another talk show. No, it's not. It's very different because it requires something of you. It's not just information. It requires something of you. Because we can't solve the problems of America or even your city by just talking generically about the issues. We have to have God's answers provided so that we can decide, am I going to cooperate with God's viewpoint in this or am I not? And if you do, there'll be change you can believe in. If you don't and continue to resist, things will go on business as usual, and they'll continue to deteriorate, not only in the country, but in your church, in your family, and that's what we're seeing. All over the country. Now, again, before we go on to the second half of the program here to talk about some of these issues in our own country, which are pretty amazing, and it's happening very rapidly right in front of us. Again, I want to provide to you a book with a message with every page in it that is going to help lift you up in your mind, in your heart, in your vision, using oftentimes pictures, stories, accounts out of our nation's past that help us to have a foundation to jump out or step out in faith to make changes in our own lives. Renewing the soul of America one person at a time, beginning with not them, with you. Not them, with you. Dr. Paul Cedar, who was chairman of the Mission American Coalition, said in endorsing this book, he said, the nation is nearing shipwreck, spiritual shipwreck. I pray that the Lord will use this book to turn up the light in America's lighthouse. What's America's lighthouse? The church. Dr. Adrian Rogers, the late Dr. Adrian Rogers, with his basso profundo voice, said it would be glorious if every spiritual leader in America could read this book. Wow. It's an $18 book. Actually, by today's standard, it would be a $25 book. But when it came out, it was an $18 book, and we're going to keep it at that $18, and you're going to get it for $15 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org, give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. Now, toward the end of the program, we're going to share with you our Summer 25 coupon that's on our website. Provides a very special opportunity for you. But before we get to that, I want to get back into what things look like in our own country right now. Right now. So, our former President Barack Obama has suggested that men need a gay or homosexual friend to learn empathy and kindness. Why? Because he was a homosexual. He practiced homosexuality, and that's why he feels that you need it. That's from a former president, who many around the country and around the world called the Messiah. It's true. They called him the Messiah. Tulsi Gabbard, she is the Director of National Intelligence for our country. She was a congresswoman, a Democrat congresswoman from Hawaii. And on Friday, she released a newly declassified presidential briefing documents that prove that puts Barack Obama at the center of the Trump-Russia collusion narrative hoax. It was recently reported that former FBI Director James Comey, CIA Director John Brennan, and DNI James Clapper worked together to purposely corrupt the Trump-Russia investigation in 2016 before Trump entered office. Why did they do it? To destroy the presidency of the United States and the will of the American people. Documents prove that Barack Obama knew it was a hoax, and he was involved in manufacturing and politicizing the intelligence to create the Trump-Russia collusion canard. So, Tulsi Gabbard says this is an issue that is important to every single one of us in America. This is not a partisan issue. It has to do with the integrity and the strength of our Democratic Republic. The released documents spell out in great detail exactly what happens when you have some of the most powerful people in our country directly leading at the helm. President Obama and his senior most national security cabinet, James Comey, John Brennan, James Clapper, and Susan Rice, and others, essentially making a very intentional decision to create this manufactured, politicized piece of intelligence with the objective of, listen, subverting the will of the American people. Without going further into that today, I ask the question, is this treason or just dirty tricks? Is this treason or just dirty tricks? Sounds pretty serious. Yesterday, President Trump posted a video of Anonymous breaking down the Obama treason crime as the biggest scandal ever. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. There must be indictments, said Tulsi Gabbard, detailing treasonous conspiracy directed by President Obama. She said it wasn't just on the side. He was the head of it. What do you make of this? And more details are yet to come. She calls it a coup against the government. What do you call it? We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
The Russian Times declares that Trump has posted an AI video of Obama being arrested. I didn't find it on American News, but I did find it on the Russian Times. American News is very afraid of this issue, including Fox News. because they're too much tangled in the mess. Everybody's afraid. Why are we afraid in the United States of America? I thought we had freedom, freedom of expression, that we were protected by our government. It appears not. It appears that the former government under Barack Obama and under Biden were not here to protect the people, but to destroy their will, to completely undermine their will through this coup or conspiracy that now is being confirmed by document after document after document. What does it mean? What does it mean for you? What does it mean for all of us? What does it tell us about who we are as a people? What does it tell us about who the Democrat Party is? Or is it not even a matter of party politics? Maybe it's just a moral and spiritual issue. Certainly at its roots. Trump posted an AI video of Obama being arrested. He wasn't actually arrested, but it was showing how Trump was supporting this effort by the Department of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. It's serious. It's not a game. She said, "I really can't fathom how special counsels run by former FBI Director Robert Mueller and U.S. Attorney John Durham didn't highlight the evidence of an alleged years-long coup against President Trump in his first term." So on Friday, her team made public more than 100 pages of material that she said revealed the Obama administration had quietly concluded Russia didn't impact the 2016 elections vote totals via cyber attacks. Gabbard has cited those documents as evidence of a treasonous conspiracy, those are her words, a treasonous conspiracy by the Obama administration to amplify manufactured intelligence that claims that Russia had helped Trump win the election. And now she calls for the former officials to be prosecuted. There must be indictments, she said. No matter how powerful they are and were at that time, no matter who was involved in creating this treasonous conspiracy against the American people, she said, they all must be held accountable. And I agree. We do not need a two-tier justice system anymore, friends, that allows certain people to skate. No, we need to come clean. We need to come clean. Assaults against U.S. immigration officials have surged by 830% in this country just in the last 6 months. 830%. What does that tell us about the moral and spiritual condition of Americans? What does it tell us about our hearts? The Epstein grand jury records are going to be released. An article says Epstein grand jury secrets may expose the cover-up. So we got another cover-up. We got another issue that is huge going to the very foundations of leadership, of trust, and it's all about trust. Hogan Gigley, Trump's Epstein pushback, all about trust, he says. Well, it's not just about trusting Trump. It's about trusting anything that our government does. One of a dozen Republican House members seeking a discharge petition to force the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files, Representative Tim Burchett of Tennessee, has warned the Washington, D.C. cover-up must come to an end. He said, "I'm ticked off. This town buries its secrets. This town does not give up its secrets easy." All of this is very serious, my friends. And we're not even beginning hardly to scratch the surface yet. Alan Dershowitz, the famous attorney, now has come out and said, "Free Ghislaine Maxwell, commute her sentence, and have her speak to Congress to help clear up this mess." I agree with him wholeheartedly. He said she had never should have been put in jail for 20 years. She should be freed, have her sentence commuted. She should then be called in front of Congress and give her total immunity, and then she can tell everything. I agree. That's what needs to happen. We need to do everything we can to get rid of all the barriers so that we can let the truth out of prison. Professing Christians are more addicted to porn than ever. That's the latest. More addicted to porn than ever. Millions of professing Christians around the world are living double lives, trapped in the destructive cycle of sex addiction and porn use, hiding their struggles in secrecy, just like the politics of secrecy, alongside unbelievers and often unnoticed by their families and churches. The number of believers compromising this area is truly astonishing, says this article. A report from last year by Pure Desire Ministries revealed that 54% of practicing Christians in the United States consume pornography at least occasionally. 49% say they are comfortable with their pornography engagement. In other words, they approve it, which Jesus called adultery, because he said, adultery is not that which you actually do, it's that which you vision in your mind and your heart. A common misconception is that this is a male-only problem. False. 25% of women and 54% of men are said to engage in semi-frequent or habitual porn use. Actually, the numbers are really much higher. The statistics that I have are that 70% of Christian men, professing Christian men, and about 34% of professing Christian women are engaged in their forms of pornography. A clear majority of evangelical pastors in the United States, over 67%, have watched pornography. 18 to 21% confess to currently being engaged in it. My understanding is that the figures are more up around 30%. Given that there are over 60,000 congregational pastors and youth pastors in the United States, it indicates that at least 12,000 of them have a porn issue. So how safe are your kids? And what is their position with regard to the God who is going to judge the earth with righteousness? And that judge is going to be Jesus. Are you beginning to see why, friends? You see, when we talk about these things and quote these statistics, it's not trying to be mean or unkind. It's saying, look, we need to see things from God's viewpoint, and then you and I and our friends and our relatives and our pastors and parachurch leaders and all those in our spheres of influence need to agree with God's viewpoint. And when we do and conduct ourselves accordingly, America will begin to change. Won't change on a dime. I don't know about you, my wife and I were having a conversation just this morning, as we do every morning, over the word, prayer, and so on. And I said, do you realize that after all these years, we're still talking with a relatively small group of people, and the responses of people are, just like they were with Jesus and with his apostles, very slim. So why do we do what we do? From an American standpoint, it's a waste of time because it's not pragmatic. You have to be able to prove vast numbers of people and vast numbers of money flowing in and big organizations. You have to prove that kind of stuff. No, that's not how God works. Not really. That's the American idea. God works by many or by few. He speaks with a still small voice in your mind and your heart. And that's what he does through this radio program. You hear, and then you have to respond. You have to make a decision. You have to choose. Choose you this day. You see, that's what the Bible is all about. That's what Christian broadcasting should be about. That's what our teaching in our churches should be about. That's what the books that we buy and read should be about. Helping people to choose. to see God's viewpoint and to conduct themselves accordingly. And then we have a former bishop and president of the African American Episcopal Zion Church who just pleaded guilty to defrauding congregations of the historically black denomination. He's 65 years of old, pleaded guilty on Tuesday to wire fraud, mail fraud, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, mail fraud as part of a scheme to gain control of church properties in California with forged documents and false statements. This was a big deal, friends. This wasn't just a casual thing that just happened. He diverted some of the funds for his own personal benefit, buying properties for two of his children, paying off mortgage debt he owned on his own house. And in order to try to pander or agree with the authorities, he said he's agreed to pay between $3 and $12 million in restitution. That's before he even gets his sentence. He's awaiting sentence on September 23rd. And he faces up to 20 years in prison and a fine of $250,000 for every single count. He became a preacher in the AME Zion Church at age 16, became a pastor at age 18. What a great start. He helped to found a revival movement called New Church Believers, which was centered on a desire to return American Christianity to the old church. In an interview, he believed that churches in the United States must reconnect with the roots of Christianity or wither as divided branches. He was right. But then he conducted himself in a totally contrary way, inconsistent with everything he said he believed and encouraged other people to follow. Are you beginning to see the problem, why we're in deep trouble? You see, that Christian member of parliament that we heard for almost 10 minutes earlier on in the program was right. The problem that England faces, England's on the edge of destruction, friends, moral and spiritual demise. So is Europe. But England, that's our mother country, and now we're following suit. We're following exactly in the same. We thought we were declaring freedom and liberty. No, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And the Spirit of the Lord ain't here anymore. A lot of other spirits, but not the Spirit of the Lord, not much. So what can we do? What can you do? You see, that's really the issue. And for a very long time, going back into the 1970s with the Moral Majority and Christian Coalition and all those movements, they were all political. They weren't spiritual. They were political, saying that group wears the black hat and we wear the white hat. So we got it right, they got it wrong, and we're going to raise a lot of money to defeat the black hats so that we can rise up and rule the country. But God was looking at us that thought we were wearing the white hats, and he says, not so fast. No. The windows of your lighthouse are so tarnished, people can't even see your light anymore. You see the problem? The problem was not with them. It was with us. Now, on our website is a coupon. It's called Summer 25. And here's what it means. It means for everyone who purchases at least $50 of my books, not other books, books of my title, you will receive not only the discounted price that's listed on the web on our site, but another $5 off for every single item. It's amazing. Just amazing. You might want to avail yourself of it. It's available this month and next, and that's it. Summer 25. Thanks for joining us. Become a partner, friends. Really, become a partner. Get a copy of the book, Renewing the Soul of America, and send your gifts post-haste.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.